Welcome to the QP Diaries podcast. This podcast is all about inspiring and empowering the next generation of QP professionals and future quality assurance leaders in the UK pharmaceutical industry. On every episode, I'll be speaking to QPs from across the industry, and our listeners will have the opportunity to hear their stories, their expertise, and we'll be discussing topics to foster growth and learning to help you develop your career as a qualified person. If you're passionate about quality assurance and want to learn from some of the very best QPs and thought leaders from across the industry, then this is the podcast for you. I'm your host, Dal Pawar, the founder of Assure Bio, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Richard, welcome to the QP Diaries podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks. I've still got a bit of cold, so I apologise if I have a bit of a coughing fit, but looking forward to it.
No problem. Yeah, well, thank you for agreeing to be a guest. It's a pleasure to have you on the show. We've been discussing it for quite a while now, and we've struggled to find dates, but we're finally here.
Yeah, well, we're all busy, and but it's great to have this opportunity.
Brilliant. Thank you, Richard. And today we're going to be covering quite a lot, actually. So we're going to be discussing your journey to becoming a QP, your approach to the role of a QP sponsor and also as a QP assessor. We're going to find out a little bit more about your leadership experience and then how you manage stress as a QP. And then finally, we're going to be discussing artificial intelligence, which is a very fashionable subject, and that and the impact that's going to have on QPs in the future. So I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on all of these topics. But to get us started, in particular for our listeners who don't know you, can you share a brief overview of your career journey in quality assurance, please?
Yeah, so I've realised that I'm now in my 40th year in the industry. So like a few people who've gone into QA and QP roles, I started off in the laboratories, so quality control, analytical development. And I've been in API manufacturing, pharmaceutical production, validation, R&D, batch review, auditing, done all of those things. And then for a couple of different companies. And then I joined 3M Healthcare, as it was, aged about 35, and got the opportunity after being there for a year to be offered the chance to go through the training. And I had always been interested in it, and finally I got the opportunity. And I think that made me as interested is that having had, you know, 15 or 17 years in experience in industry already, I'd learned about and I'd worked with QPs, and I'd seen the challenges that they had and the variety of work that they had. And I thought, yeah, I fancy some of that. It's a challenge. It's a bit scary, actually, and I guess a lot of trainee QPs, you know, feel that now. Potential trainee QPs, you know, will be a bit scared, and I know that there have been a lot of people who've actually done the training and then not sat their vivas, and so yes, they've done that because, frankly, they've been a bit scared. So it is a responsibility, but it's a. That's what drove me into QA and then eventually into the role of QP.
Okay, yeah. So I suppose what initially sparked your interest was from your time at 3M Healthcare, and yeah, just seeing the QPs in that team.
As I say, I'd worked for 17 years for Wellcome Foundation, AstraZeneca, CP Pharmaceuticals, okay. Quite a few people before I got to 3M. And I'd seen different QPs working, I'd seen different products being involved in different dosage forms, had lots of technical and compliance type of challenges, which is a fashionable word for problems that had to overcome. And always the QP was at the thick of it, and the ones who ultimately had to make the decision, some of them very difficult decisions, again, working in that grey area, you know, nothing's black and white. Often for QPs and for some companies and for some products especially, it's never in the black or white. It's always in different shades of grey. And that was the challenge that stimulated me and interested me.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks for sharing that. And when did you qualify as a QP?
Something like 2002. I
Okay.
think it was October 2002, having done 2 years of training at one of the big providers. I enjoyed the training as much as anything, but it was really the experience that I'd gained up to that point and during my time at 3M which really helped.
Yeah, brilliant. And I'm assuming you've learned quite a lot over the years, and you work with multiple dosage forms as well, from looking at your experience.
Like many people, I started off in the more simple ones. They have their own specific challenges, but solid dose and liquids and creams. At 3M, I got chance to support those products, but also pressurized metered dose inhalers too, and steriles. And then since that time, I've been involved much more in IMPs and in aseptic manufacture, in ATMPs, gene therapy products, etc. So there are a few dosage forms that I've not had experience of, and that's the beauty of it. As a QP, you can, if you so wish, take the opportunity to get involved in all of these and learn about them and be involved in releasing them and solving the problems and reacting to the problems.
So you've been exposed to a lot of different companies then, and yeah, different product ranges throughout your career, and now you're a consultant.
I've been in that role for 9 years now. It was something which I'd already always thought that I might end up doing, but having had a very senior role, looking after EMEA quality for medical devices and medicines for a big company, I wanted to get away from the corporate strategy and sitting in meetings for 10 or 12 hours a day and get back to a bit more variety and more technical hands-on QP type of challenges. So I know that you and many of your viewers today have experience of those challenges as a contract QP working in industry, but it's important to make sure that you enjoy your role. And I've managed to get a good balance of the different roles with different companies that I try and maintain so that I continue to enjoy and be stimulated by and learn because you never stop learning. You never stop learning.
So it sounds like you've got the healthy balance at the moment then, with where you are in your career.
It's always a challenge. We've spoken about this before. As a somebody working senior, sometimes it's part of the QP role. Depends on the makeup of the company, but certainly, as a consultant contract QP. I'm contacted 365 24/7, and that you just have to you have to find a way of managing that and giving yourself free time, looking after your family and your other interests to keep maintain that work-life balance. But it's one of those challenges that you probably feel most acutely when you're a younger QP or earlier in your career, and these challenges come to you for the first time. And this is why we'll probably talk a bit later about managing stress and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, it's a question that I have on my list for later, Richard. I think drilling back to when you started your journey as a trainee, you've already touched upon it, that it's that's a very difficult journey. And I speak to a lot of trainees where they find the application process to be quite difficult. In particular, I know sponsors have an important part to play
Very.
supporting a trainee QP in on that journey. So what in particular, what's your approach to the role as a QP sponsor, and how important is that in shaping the career of a trainee into an eligible QP?
So the sponsor is very important, very, very important. More so for some people than for others, depending on the circumstances, and I'll explain that. But I was lucky enough to have a very diligent QP. She was a bit of a hard ass, and you know who you are. But it was very much appreciated and very valuable. And I was always challenged and pushed and supported very well. And all of those things are really important from the QP. I was very lucky that, as I explained, in my introduction, that I had 17 years of experience in a number of companies and a number of dosage forms and in a number of roles, that in terms of my application form, I could fill quite a lot of the sections in and have examples of my experience to refer to and to demonstrate how I met the study guide. The real value of the sponsor is making sure that the applicant, the trainee QP, has got that experience. You can't have too much experience. It is impossible, but you only have a certain amount of time. Otherwise, people would be waiting till they were 90 and before they applied. So it's getting the balance right there. But there is definitely too little experience. And then as an assessor, when we look through the application forms, we're looking at them against the study guide and trying to make sure that the applicant, when they come to Viva, if they're suitable for to be invited to Viva, that they have got sufficient experience. And we are not allowed as assessors to invite somebody if they don't meet the minimum requirements. But then there's additional information above and beyond the minimum that we would like to see. And sometimes the applicant just doesn't offer that information up freely. And the sponsor is important then to make sure that the applicant not only has the right information, but they present it in the right way. So yeah. And they of course have to fill their own sponsor form in as well, which is important. So the all of these things, have been the reason why a number of people over the years haven't been invited to interview or have been asked for more information. And again, I think we're going to talk about the QP symposium later as well, which is dear to my heart. And in this year's symposium, we're hoping to have a little video session on the role of the sponsor and the importance of the sponsor, because we're going to try and make the symposium more interesting and of more value to the trainee QP as well as the those who are already acting as QPs.
So I suppose it's integral to get the right sponsor for that individual's career who's going to be supportive throughout that, plus also ensure that they're fully prepared, they're fully ready to go as that
Absolutely. you know, and there's different words I'd use there. You know, the role of the sponsor is to guide, to coach, to push, you know, to provide honest feedback to the trainee QP, you know, on sometimes it's a difficult conversation, you know, telling somebody that they're not assertive enough, or you know, their communication style is not appropriate. That, you know, even though the applicant may feel they've got enough experience, that frankly they haven't. It can be a difficult role to be a sponsor, and even more difficult to be a good sponsor. So, yeah, there's all of those things, as well as arranging the experience and having lots of giving mock vivas to ensure that the applicant is not only good on paper, but good in presenting too.
So make sure they're fully competent in all areas.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, we mentioned stress in the daily role of a QP, but there's probably nothing more stressful than the viva itself. So if you can get through that and manage your stress levels and your anxiety, and try and keep calm, because I think one of the key things for a QP is, in all situations, is to try and keep calm. Because people are always looking up to you and looking for you to make decisions, looking for you for advice, an approach, whatever it is, and it's always better, both in the viva and as in your routine role, to try and stay calm.
And you mentioned that you're a QP assassin, so you're the vice chair of the Royal Society of Chemistry.
I am. I've just become the vice chair. So I spent 6 years in the early 2000s as an assessor for the RSC, and then I was missing it because I originally joined to try and give something back. You're in the RSC. You were only allowed at the time to serve two periods of 3 years each, and I served that time, and then a few years later, missing it, I got the chance to ask somebody if I could be considered to go back, and I've just finished my first 4 year term, and I'm now, as vice chair, I get to stay on a bit longer, hopefully. So yeah, very much enjoying it.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, well, it's something you're very passionate about, and you mentioned that it's giving back to junior QPs and those individuals going through that process. So what guidance then would you offer to your younger self when starting your journey as a trainee?
To my younger self, there's lots of guidance I'd give, probably about marriage and alcohol and things like that. But as a QP, probably try not to overcommit. Again, this is linked to, you know, stress, and I found myself in a position where there was a lot going on in the company that I was at, and a lot of challenges. And if you are conscientious and hardworking and willing to give, then it's almost impossible for the organization to say no to you. They're waiting for you to set the boundaries and to say, you know, 12 hours a day is too much. You know, I got to the point where, you know, if they'd have let me work 26 hours a day, I think they would have let me do it. It was learning that I could and should say no. So I guess that's a key thing for me there. Another thing was, I haven't heard this acronym for many years, but it's something that stuck with me. I had a boss who introduced me to GEMO, GEMO, Good Enough Move On. And I think that was a hard lesson for myself as well. I'd certainly tell myself a much younger age to learn about GEMO. Try not to be too much of a perfectionist, because there's an old phrase, overgilding the lily. You can keep on trying to polish something and making it better, but often you 90% is good enough, or even less. And I think that is something I then applied to decision making, because you only need the answer to the key question. So when you're trying to decide on whether a batch is fit for purpose, you don't need to ask and get answers to 100 questions. You only basically need to know a few. So you need to know whether it meets the marketing authorization. You need to know whether it meets GMP. You need to know what went wrong and how serious it is. Sometimes, you don't know, those answers. And a part of the investigation, you almost want to know everything there is to know about that batch, but you don't actually need that to make the decision. So sometimes, you can ask for too much information or wait for too much information. So yes, I think GEMO is something that I would tell myself about as well.
Yeah, no, that's really good advice. You're making the role of a QP not sound very easy at all, and there's a lot of pressures in that position as well.
So linked to those pressures, I think, it's time management. So
Yeah.
another thing is Covey's four quadrants. So urgent, not important, etc. And I think that if you find yourself spending too much time in the not urgent and not important area, those activities are non-value adding. So if you're doing anything that's not urgent and not important, stop doing it. When it becomes important, when it becomes urgent, or both, then you can d deal with it. So that's something which I learned as well. And I guess that can also fall into the category of prioritization and risk management as well. Because, if something's a low priority or a low risk, stop doing it. Stop doing it. Align yourself to the goals and the activities of other departments of the company that are more important, more urgent, higher risk, higher value adding, and spend your time there, because that not only will get rid of a large chunk of your workload, but it will also mean that people actually see what you're doing as being of more value, helping them, adding value to the business, making a company more compliant, whatever it is, all of those important things.
Yeah. So I'm assuming you recognized most of these challenges that you were facing earlier in your career, and I think a lot of people do, where they're sort of fighting the battle between career progression, wanting to climb up the ladder, go into leadership, your ambition as an individual. But then, how do you manage the potential burnout? I mean, were there any specific strategies or practices that you followed in particular throughout your career?
As I said, you're always learning and relearning as well. So every day I've got to the age where I'm lucky if I learn something new, and I don't forget something equally important. So many of the lessons that I have learned, I've relearned over the years, and I continue to do that. And I'm always trying to look forward. And I think that's the way people should see it. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Hare and the tortoise. You'll get there in the end. So, and I think if you keep on giving yourself challenges as well, then it keeps you stimulated. So yeah, I'm not sure whether I answered the last question very well there, but I think you have to keep looking forward.
Yeah, and that I'm guessing that's quite key to stay motivated throughout your career.
And don't be scared of making changes. A lot of time, the opportunities that come to you, they don't feel like opportunities. Sometimes those I've been dropped in at the deep end quite a few times in my career. And if you're to use that analogy again, if you sink to the bottom and come up spluttering, it certainly doesn't feel like an opportunity at the time. But any challenge, anything that happens to you in life, can be seen as an opportunity and can be turned into one. And when you look back at it, you probably think, well, there weren't not everything that happened was good or positive, but there were things that came out of it. And it certainly teaches you to be resilient, and you learn new skills and you hone those skills, and those learnings give you new opportunities moving forward, and make you less scared of things that happen. So yeah, don't be scared of change, don't at the same time, don't try and take on too much. I've done that as well. So yeah, it's a great adventure. It's a great journey. Who knows when where the destination is. Yeah, try and enjoy it.
Did you find going from just being a sole QP batch certification in terms of your role and responsibilities, then transitioning to leadership, was that a very challenging period for yourself?
That's a good question. I never worked for a company as a QP where that was my only role. So I had management positions and multiple responsibilities before I came QP. So I looked after various functions, and through so they always say, be careful what you ask for, because you might just get it. And I did ask for things, and I challenged people. And so I ended up being volunteered or given the opportunity, that sometimes it felt a bit like a poison chalice, but given the opportunity to take over things. And sometimes it was temporary, which then became permanent, and sometimes it was permanent that then grew. So I had multiple responsibilities for multiple functions from a relatively young age, at the same time doing my routine QP duties as well. So I learned to through necessity and to juggle a number of things at once. In terms of leadership, when you're trying to do all of those things, do them well, and manage your time, you do learn not only what the value of things like honesty, integrity, calmness, and listening are as a manager and a leader, but you also learn the value of skills such as process thinking, decision making, prioritization, delegation, performance management. And I think if you try and do all of those things or reasonably well, some that you might find easier or better, you might be better at than others, then they all help you to become, a good leader, or help you to build the foundations for getting that first leadership role, and maybe getting better at it.
You've preempted one of the answers to my next question in terms of the sort of qualities, characteristics for someone aspiring to be a leader. So I think in the QP report that you supported Assure Buy with. You mentioned about, yeah, but when you're a QP, you're just sort of naturally provided with additional responsibilities as a leader, as a manager, and sometimes just thrown into the deep end. So I think a lot of people are put into that position, and yeah, it's not the easier. So that's where I was going to ask, what are the characteristics you believe?
Well, you have to you have to have the technical experience and ability to make those decisions. But you are ideally placed within an organization as being at a relatively senior level, and there being relatively few QPs, that if you are willing to take a leadership position, and you're willing to develop yourself, then those opportunities will come. Might not come within the company that you work for, but they might eventually. But they'll certainly be out there. And the challenge or the difficulty then is to decide how far you want to go. I remember earlier in my career having a discussion with a European training manager who sat at the bar with me one night, and told me about how his career had gone wrong. And I've shared this with people over the years, but I'll share with it with you now. And he basically said he had this great opportunity when he was in his late 20s to basically take a 3-grade step up, and it was sold to him as being fantastic. And he was ambitious, and the pay rise was very attractive. But it was, he said, in hindsight, it was the worst thing he could possibly have done, because it had very negative impact on his personal life and on his career path. And it took him the next 10 or 15 years to get back to anywhere near where he wanted to be and decided where he wanted to go. So yeah, there's people who are attracted by the kudos and the pay of a senior position. I think if we're all being honest, brutally honest, then some of us will actually say that there is a level at which I won't be capable or very good at operating. I wouldn't, like, I'll give you an example. I wouldn't want to run the country. I wouldn't want to be prime minister. Yeah. And I don't know whether I'd be very good at it. I'd certainly know that it would be extremely stressful. So there comes a point in anybody's career where you have to say, is this really what I wanted to do, and what I still want to do? And for some people, great, yes. It's probably not the best to talk about politics at the moment, but it's difficult. I think the jobs get harder the further you go up. And I think one of the things that is a characteristic of most people who become QPs is that they want to do a good job. They want to look after patients. They want to gain new skills and take decisions and have security of their position. And I think at some point you have to say, what is enough for me, and do I want to go any further?
So I suppose coming back to the point you made earlier about not overcommitting and making sure it's the right move for that individual, whether it's leadership or not, or
And when I went into contract work, the first few roles I had were as interim senior managers, director, VP level. And some of those positions were caused by the previous incumbent, either burning out, not being perceived as being the right person for the role, or the right person for the company, or doing a good job. It's a bit like being a football manager, trying to be a QP and, somebody senior in quality. It's a bit like being a football manager. If you get a few bad results, if you haven't got the right team around you, the right resources, if you take your eye off the ball, as it were, and you don't manage both, the team and the owner, then the wheels can quickly fall off, and you end up, looking for those words that the CEO that has absolute confidence in you, which means that you're going to be on the on a fish and chip paper that in a few weeks' time as somebody who's been kicked out. So not easy, not easy. So you have to decide whether that's what you actually want to do.
Thanks for sharing your experiences, Richard. That's appreciated. And we're actually nearing the end of our chat, but there is one more subject to cover, and that is getting your thoughts on artificial intelligence and its impact on decision-making process for a QP. And I think we know from LinkedIn that the conversation is evolving. More and more information is coming out. So what are your thoughts? How can QPs prepare for this in the future?
I think artificial intelligence is just one more of those extra challenges that QPs have had over the years as the regulations and guidance and the world changes. We've seen different dosage forms arrive, and ways of treating patients. I think artificial intelligence will transform the way in which data and information can be assessed. And so it's a very positive thing that can help the QP in making their decisions, not only from a batch review, batch certification perspective, which then leads to the release of the product, but also in terms of the oversight that the QP has of the whole pharmaceutical quality system and the company. So I think that it can be, and it will be relatively quickly, very valuable. But it's like everything, it has to have some regulation and some, I think Martin Lush used the phrase on LinkedIn last week, guardrails. There are no guardrails at the moment. The regulators, my concern is that the regulators are, they've got challenges of their own. They're under-resourced. They've got a lot of things to do, but they are not interacting with the pharmaceutical industry, with QPs. They are not keeping up with the challenge of the speed that artificial intelligence is progressing, and the way it can be used in the QP role. So I would like to see that very much being a conversation that the industry has with the MHRA and the MMA, FDA, etc. And I think it can't happen quick enough. So if anybody wants to contact me, they'll find a willing pair of ears here. And I'm going to be trying to personally push that as much as I can, because I feel it's the right thing to do. I know we're running out of time. We are going to be discussing artificial intelligence as one of the topics at the QP Symposium on May the 15th at the BMA in London. We've got a really good schedule of speakers. Just quickly going through them, we've got challenges on of new dosage forms. what next after Annex One, with the next inspector hopefully leading that. Leadership for QPs, which is something that we've talked about today, and I think that that will be a really, really interesting and challenging keynote speech. Opinions and examples of compliance challenges, again from ex-inspectors, talk about AI and some of the things which are already being done with that to support the QP and where we go from that. And then finally, post-Brexit divergence. So I think if I'd encourage everybody, because it's great value, it's great networking, and I would encourage people to book early, and get into that, get booked on that course.
Yeah, no, thank you for sharing that information, Richard. I mean, it sounds like a pretty exciting agenda, and yeah, especially the way artificial is evolving, and what you already mentioned about the benefits of trainee QPs and networking, CPD, and yeah, the real focus on the future for QPs, which I'm sure everyone wants to hear about.
It's not just that we need want to hear about it, but I think we need to hear about it. So, it's the Royal Society of Chemistry's turn to host the symposium this year with the support of the Royal Society of Biology and the Royal Pharmaceutical Society, of course. But we're hosting it, and we're trying to make it the best ever if we can, add as much value as possible, make sure that the speakers and the subjects are as good as possible. I haven't mentioned, but we're trying to take a note out of the MHRA's book and include a number of videos as well, short videos to have on a number of other subjects that we just can't fit in. And have them shown during the breaks and at lunchtime too. So again, maximum value we're trying to give to everybody, and very excited by it. So yeah,
I can see. Yeah, so you're trying to squeeze as much in as possible in one day.
absolutely.
Brilliant. Yeah. No. Well, that's it with my questions, Richard. Thank you for being a guest on the QP Diaries. It's been a fascinating conversation, and we've covered quite a lot in a short amount of time, which sounds very much like the QP symposium and the agenda that you're going to be having in May. So if you mentioned it already, if any of our listeners want to contact you, anyone particular about AI especially, is LinkedIn the best way to do that?
Yeah, that's great. I'm on LinkedIn, so be great if anybody wants to contact me. If you put in there, what the subject is, why you want to connect with me, that would be great. You get a number of unsolicited contacts, don't you? From a data integrity point of view, I don't accept all the offers, invitations I get to try and protect myself. So if you put a little note in there and say what it's about, then I'll know and I'll accept it.
Excellent. Thank you, Richard. All right. Well, I'll leave you to your evening. You enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, Dal. It's been a real pleasure and a great opportunity to hopefully share a few of my passions and interests with everybody. So I appreciate the opportunity.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. All the best.
A huge thank you to our special guest and to our listeners for tuning into the QP Diaries podcast. We hope you enjoy the show. As the founder of Assure Bio, we created the podcast to support our wider quality assurance community, which aligns to our dedicated offering as a recruitment agency, providing services to the pharmaceutical and biotech industry across the UK. We have over 15 years' experience in the industry, exclusively focused on recruiting senior quality assurance leaders and QPs. If you want to learn more about Assure Bio's recruitment services, or if you'd like to be a guest on the podcast, then please don't hesitate to contact me. Thank you.